Welcome, baddies. I am your host, Tara Newell, the host of Tara's Baddies Club. And today for my guest, I have Tabitha Newell. She is the host of a Little Bit of Life podcast. She's from Arizona and living in Texas now. And before we get into her episode, I just want to talk a little bit about this week. This week was amazing. I've had a lot of opportunities to connect with new people. I really just, you know, am coming into my light in a sense, or my business girl era. I have the podcast episode edited already for 2 weeks. I'm just so excited because everything's in alignment. I'm feeling on top of my projects. I'm feeling on top of my podcast right now. I'm having so many great conversations with so many amazing people. I'm meeting new people in Hollywood and LA. So life is great right now because life is full of opportunities. And also my voice is a little bit off today because I am sick, but that is not holding me back and I am ready to kick butt. So let's get into this episode with Tabitha and let's talk about double grief. Hi, Tabitha. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know that I was a guest on your podcast and our friend connected us because we have the last name Newells. So I'm so excited to have you on today. Why don't you start to tell me a little bit about yourself?
Thank you so much for having me on. It was crazy to hear how we were connected. We have the same last name. I'm still deep diving down that rabbit hole to see if somehow we're related. But I think with how our personalities are, there has to be a connection. But I live in Texas now. I host my own podcast and I started diving into it because of, needless to say, a man. I was in a bad situation in a relationship. I was controlled to the T and basically told, no one wants to listen to what you have to say. You're a female. No, this is a hobby. I went through a lot this past year, which was very traumatizing. I consider myself to have very thick skin. Nothing usually bothers me. I think last year plummeted me to the point where I really had to sit with myself. I always record with guests and talk about finding yourself and loving yourself. And this past year taught me, like, I've never done that on my own. And it was traumatizing and scary. I moved, I relocated from Arizona. I lived there for over 22 years. I had my girlfriends, my lash artist, my spray tan. I mean, if anyone needed something, I knew exactly where to go. And I fell in love with somebody. He was introduced through mutual friends. And I believed everything he said, hook, line, and sinker. I knew better. Those red flags were waving. I just thought they were really pretty. And let's just change them a darker red. From the day that we met to the day I packed up a U-Haul with everything I owned, it was less than 60 days. And I moved from Arizona to Texas. And needless to say, the relationship crumbled pretty quickly, matter of 8 to 9 months. I always feel like people's personalities kind of come out. You know, I always say in about 90 days, you'll get to kind of see the glimpse of the version you're really going to get. So yeah, I mean, I always thought, you know, relationships, they come and go. But I had kind of my core values. I knew what I was doing with my business. I'm a dog mom. I had the most amazing Frenchie he just turned 2 on Halloween. He passed tragically less than 30 days after his second birthday. So I kind of got hit back to back with a loss of a relationship of what I thought would be a marriage the rest of my life at 38 years old. I thought I found my person, knowing, like, no more awkward dates, no more dating apps, no more being that single friend. That came to a crash. And then it quickly followed with that double grief of losing my heart dog.
I'm so sorry about that. Do you feel that the grief kind of doubles in a sense? And have you ever experienced a low point like this in your life?
No, I've never experienced anything like it. I've always been that one that everybody would come to and everybody would share their troubles. And I would carry things on my shoulders, especially with my guests that would come on. We talk about a lot of really deep, heavy mental health topics. So I always felt I carried a lot, but I felt like I had strong enough shoulders to do so. Losing the relationship was something that I feel like a lot of people around me were like, I told you so, or you knew better. And I feel like in relationship breakups, we always hear that as women of, you know, oh, well, what about this? And Okay, well, where were you when we first met? Where was that sense of like looking out for me? But we always wait till the end, I feel like, because we want our friends to be happy. But losing my heart dog was the hardest thing I have ever been through in my life. I'm huge on mental health. I'm huge on talking. And I secluded myself for 7 days after his passing. I have an older senior. She's 13 years old. And I mean, I shut my phone off. I literally stopped eating for 7 days. I survived on Diet Coke and Monster as long as I had some form of a liquid. I brought my mattress of all things into my living room because I just didn't feel that my room was like my safe spot anymore. There were just so many memories. And it was probably the darkest time I've ever had. I mean, I even questioned of should I still be here? Should I be living without him? How do I do this? And it was really hard because I don't have children. So he was my child. So to relate to somebody like that was really hard. I felt really lonely.
I think that when you have a dog that you're so close with, and you know, a lot of people can't kind of see this because they're like, oh, I have my children. But when you have that one dog and it's your one and only, it's your world, I think it hits much differently than it would if it was like a family dog. I went through something similar with Cash, and you know, that's why when it happened, I felt just so much for you because I don't know about you, but I was literally like, I would get up and I just walk in circles because I'm like, I don't know what to do right now. Am I supposed to take out something? You know, how did you feel with that?
I felt the same. I felt like I lost my purpose. And I think so many people were shocked by that because they're like, well, I mean, I heard so many times of it was just a dog, or, you will get over this. It just takes time. And so I think in that grief stage, I was always looking for the end of like, okay, when am I going to stop hurting? When am I going to stop grieving? When am I going to stop trying to find a purpose? And it was something where even now, I mean, I'm 3 months out and I did an episode that aired just on Tuesday, and it was the loss of another Frenchie in the community. She was the reason I got Rupert, and it triggers. And it's something where you never know what's going to trigger, but it's hard because I felt it's almost like a roller coaster with grief. And there's stages that we talk about grief with humans when we lose that kind of a bond. But I don't think it's really talked about when you lose a pet, let alone a heart dog, which is devastating.
Yeah, no, I was talking to someone earlier and we were talking about the stages of grief and how we really think that it's the same for death and a breakup. So for you to be getting hit with a double whammy in a sense, I can't imagine. Well, I can because, you know, we get to those places at times and sometimes things just hit us all at once. But do you think that there was, and I hate to say this because there shouldn't be a reason at all for why something passes, but do you think that there was kind of like a reason in the universe or with God with this?
Yeah, I'm huge on signs. I was raised, religious, especially with family and friends growing up. And my feelings kind of turned, but it really amazed me because I'm very much one of those people. I want to know the reason why. I need to know that information. And with Rupert, he just had a runny nose. He was not responding to medical treatment. So it was just supposed to be another vet visit. We went in, they're like, we'll try new medication. I had planned to go to Arizona to visit my family and my friends. I hadn't been back in a year. And I felt it was time. I was like, I need to be surrounded by my support system, not just over the phone or FaceTime. Like, I need physical relationships close to me, my girlfriends, my mom. Like, I just need to have a hug. And I think that's really important that I needed. And I remember asking the vet at that time, like, I'm planning to drive. Is he okay to travel? And he's like, yeah, he's clear. We never did an x-ray that day. And I really do believe in timing. I feel that it was his timing because if we would have found that, I never would have gone. He got very sick in Arizona. They just listened to his heart and heard a heart murmur. And they're like, we'd like to do an x-ray. We want to do this treatment. And I denied it sitting there because I'm like, let me just get home. Like, something in my gut instinct said, just wait till you get home. And that little man sat for 13 hours one way, slept in my lap, and there was no issue. And I really do feel like he knew the universe, God, whatever is bigger and better, knew that I needed that to make decisions on my breakup and on healing and closure. Otherwise, I feel like I still would have been spiraling from both of them happening so quickly together.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that he was around for 2 years because your relationship, so he was at the beginning before the relationship established that bond with you, and then you go through this breakup, and then, you know, he's there for the aftermath a little bit, but then unfortunately he passes. So it's I think it's really shows that he was meant to be there in his in your life for that time.
I moved 4 times in the matter of a year. And it was, I'm a homebody. I'm a creature. I'm a nester. I like having my home and my dogs, and everything has its place. And I remember even last year moving out of the house and just seeing what you would think your home and your life looks like to be crumbling. I remember this huge moment. There was just an audio that came up on a reel, and it was so simple. It was just a word choice, and it says, "Are you done?" And then it was silence. And then the person on the audio said, "Yeah, I'm done." And I remember sitting on the bare wood floor and my life in boxes. And I remember my Frenchie sitting there. And I remember doing this reel, and I never posted it. But I remember doing it and really sitting with myself thinking, you can plan your entire life out to a T, and it's not going to go the way that you expect it. And that's okay. And that's what I'm learning in this double grief process is I used to be a massive planner, almost to like an OCD level. He has taught me so much to not allow moments to pass you by because you can't get those moments back.
Are you as much as a planner now?
If I said no, that would be lying. I think I'm just a little bit more relaxed, so to speak. But it's also something it taught me through the grief is I worked through my sadness, and I really dove into disappearing. And I think that's also a form of healing that a lot of people don't realize is I needed my brain busy. I needed a purpose. And with that has come the most amazing blessings, things I never expected. But there's still that grief of even being out in the dating world and dating again, and having that constant thought process of comparing to your last relationship or comparing those feelings. And I do the same with having a new puppy now. I have two, midlife crisis, but I feel like now I'm in this constant comparison of this is what I had. Can I just carbon copy it? And I think that's a form of grief too. It's how we process what we lost and what we still crave.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I went and did the same thing just with one dog and so too.
I don't suggest to.
I went out and I got an Australian Shepherd like 3 weeks after. Well, I put a deposit on him 3 weeks after my dog passed away. And it was because everyone kind of saw that I was codependent with my dog. And you kind of need that, especially. I don't know about you, but when dealing with mental health and like PTSD and trauma, it was such a great part of my life that helped heal me.
Yeah, I do a lot of episodes on my podcast about mental health, and I'm very much an avid creator. I hate using that word, but on social platforms. And I've done a lot of stuff with mental health and veterans and Blue Line and stuff like that. And it was something where, I mean, my mom and I are so close. We're best friends. She just moved finally to Texas like 2 months ago. And I remember, I mean, it was interesting to hear too, because you don't think about how your grief or your loss affects those around you in your support system. And I remember my mom coming in just, I think it was like a week or two ago, and she just had a breakdown. And I'm like, are you okay? And I remember she's like, I don't have closure over his passing. And I'm like, and I never thought of that, because I'm like, why would somebody that's not around him every day need that closure? And it kind of amazed me. And it really made me open up, which I think I scared her. Because the texts are constant every day. But I told her, I said, I've never been in a deeper form of depression in my entire life. And she's like, what do you mean? And I opened up to her. It just flew out of my mouth because I'm that strong, independent kid that she raised. And I said, I had many thoughts that I didn't want to be here anymore. And I didn't know what that looked like. And she's like, do we need to go somewhere? I'm like, no, like, we're good. But it made me really sit down with myself and like realize how much even the smallest things like him also impacted other people. I mean, I still can't even get through the numerous people that said, I got a Frenchie because of you. Or, I mean, I got the most amazing messages because he touched their lives. And it's like, I felt selfish in my grief stage almost. I felt selfish almost that I was grieving him, but he wasn't just impactful in my life either.
Yeah, and I think that's when this dog comes into your life, these family members that are really just like your one and only family member. I think that it's just so different with the brain and everything. And people see that dog and they're like, oh my gosh, I want that.
I want that because it looks so great and that dog looks so well behaved because he's with you all the time. And I've actually had a few people go and get Australian Shepherds because of me too. But then it's funny because it's not the same. And they don't realize, oh, your dog's attached at the hip with you, and ours is a little crazy now.
Yeah. I don't know if you felt this. I think it's something that a lot of people don't expect, or maybe they just don't talk about. When you got your other dog, did you feel guilty to love again?
Yes, absolutely. And it was because so many people tell you, oh, I can't move on from that dog passing away. And I think those people kind of guilt you, and it's absolutely okay to think that way, you know? But you need to do what's good for you. If you're a dog person and you have a dog in your life constantly and every single day, and that dog is part of your every single day routine, and you can't get by without that dog being there, I literally say think about getting a dog right away. And that's why I kind of pushed, well, like, you know, I encouraged you to do that too, because I wanted you to feel supported in getting that dog. And I also didn't want you to be in the state that I felt like I was in with that.
I got out of the shower as I was cleaning off the mirror, and I saw fingers pushing through my window.
He looked very demonic, and he said, in like a really scruffy voice, he said, "Hey."
I headed up that way, and my dog barked, and I looked over, and he was probably 20 feet away from me, walking straight towards me.
He used her phone after he had killed her to add me on Facebook.
I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. We're the hosts of Strictly Stalking, bringing you heroic stories of those who have survived at the hands of a stalker.
To hear these stories and more, listen to Strictly Stalking wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I feel even guilty now. I mean, I've had these two little guys. I have a male and a female. And I remember like even looking at like my male, for instance, my female's different. She's a merle. And he was just a normal red sable, brown Frenchie, just basic. And I remember getting her and it was almost like this safety net of like, she looks nothing like him. She's a female versus a male. I'm not going to have any comparisons. I'm not going to feel guilty. Getting him was a completely different ballgame. And it's amazing because I still also feel guilt. I mean, I was dating in my new town when I moved after my relationship ended. And I think I was avidly putting a band-aid on the breakup. So I was so interested in finding somebody I clicked with, finding companionship. Even if it wasn't lifelong, I was like, I need somebody. I feel like I just need the companionship. That I left my dogs at home on numerous nights for a couple hours. I mean, we all do it. But when Rupert passed, now I have almost this guilt and fear to go out and date again of I'm not spending this time. What if something happens when I'm gone? I'm never going to get this time back over going out for dinner with somebody that is never going to get past date number one. Let's be real. The dating world is something else.
Yeah.
And so I feel a lot of guilt with that too. You know, I feel like maybe, I don't know if you felt this in that double grief process, but you live in this world of what ifs all the time.
Yeah. And that's something, at least for me, you know, the what ifs are what ifs, you know, those are always going to be there. It's like, what if I took my dog off all the meds and had him on CBD and THC from the beginning? But I'm a believer, like I'm sure you are, that everything's meant to happen for a reason. And he was a part of your life for that time. I think, at least this is the coaching side of me. When you feel that guilt and you feel bad for moving on and you're like, okay, I need to get back to these dogs because I don't know what's going to happen from them. I think it's the residual trauma from you losing something that shouldn't have happened that way.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine. I had a great friend of mine that lived in Colorado. He was this female, I swear, stop. He was a couple months ahead of me in regards to like losing his heart dog. And so I almost felt this sense of control of I know what to expect. I know what this is going to look like. I know in a month from now what I'm going to feel like in 2 months and 3 months. And now looking, I'm like, man, I had no idea. And I had a great friend of mine in Connecticut that she was seeing the deterioration of her dog who was 13. And, you know, I remember the audio messages we would send. I mean, 7, 8, 10 minutes long, sobbing, sadness. And I remember telling her, like, I know what you're going to feel like because I can see in the crystal ball what's coming. And it was something where I'm like, I think that in life, we're so concerned about feelings and not processing those and trying to push through, like, when is this going to stop? That I always thought losing him in such a tragic way was a way that I could help other people know what was coming. And let me tell you, when you least expect it, life will smack you and teach you lessons that you never even knew you needed.
Oh, yes. I think that, you know, you could definitely relate to people with grief and stuff, but I'm sure for you, you could say this, it's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you had that unique experience with him. I didn't. Like, I could feel for you, but, you know, you're mm-hmm. the one that's in it.
Yep. Yep. And everyone grieves different too. I mean, I finally just did it a couple weeks ago, kind of redid my space. When he passed, I had photos printed everywhere. And I mean, I felt so bad. I remember it was like maybe 4 or 5 days after. And I was like, I need to get as many pictures of him, my favorites, on my phone printed. The poor lady at CVS, I walked in with sunglasses on in the middle of a storm in West Texas. My eyes were terrible. My lash extensions were gone. And I remember I'm like, I'm here to do a pickup order. And she's like, okay, I didn't even pay attention. I printed 78 pictures. What is one human going to do with 78 pictures?
You might eat them all. You never know.
I'm like,
you have spider lashes. You can't think straight.
Right? And she's like, oh yeah, you had 78 pictures. And I'm like, mm-hmm. And I remember standing there and she just kind of looked at me and I was like, my dog died. And she's like, have a good day. Like, you could just tell she was like, I don't know how to handle this. And I remember getting home and doing a photo book and like putting them in frames and they were on the walls. And I just took them down about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Okay. I remember my mom here. I was like, I took them down. And she was like, mm-hmm. And I was like, it was starting to look like a shrine. And she's like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, don't judge me. And she's like, no judgment. But it's something that so many people grieve differently. I think we start to feel crazy when we go through traumatic experiences and we get so inside of our brain that we will grasp onto anything that we feel we have control of.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was that looking like, grasping control of what you had control of?
I think with the relationships, this is going to sound so bad, but this is real life. I've always been the one that leads.
Okay.
I've always been the one in control of like when my emotions are done or emotionally I'm distrained and I'm done, like I end things. I think I was still checked into my relationship, even though I knew he was being unfaithful.
Yeah.
And even though I knew that we were the worst toxic relationship, I still had the control to say when I was done. With that kind of happened the same thing with Rupert, which was interesting with my dog. I had the control going into vets and stating, no, we're not trying this medication, or yes, we're going to try this option. And it's amazing to me because the two things I loved the most last year were the two situations that I had absolutely no control over. He was not responding to treatment. My ex already was on his one way out because I learned he constantly rotated women by the year. And I think it was me not knowing that I didn't have control. And so it's been interesting, like even dating now or raising my new dogs, I'm like, I really need to let go a little bit and allow life to just continue to life. And every day is not going to be perfect, but I need to just enjoy those moments of imperfection.
Yeah, no. And okay, this is a weird question to have just because I'm this way. Do you get a bit hypervigilant over the dogs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like the residual trauma too, mm-hmm. I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even like, because they're both the runts. And so I'm very cautious of that.
Yeah.
People always want to touch them or hold them. And like, I'm very much like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Where are you at? Who are you at? And having two of them, I almost feel, again, that control factor. If I go in public, I can't have eyes on both of them at the same time. What if somebody takes one and takes off with them? But even the most mundane things of eating, like, are you eating enough? What do you? And it's like that kind of panic moment. I mean, the first, I would say week with my female, she slept super close to me. which I'm like, dude, when you get older, we're in so much trouble. And she still does it to this day. But it was like knowing like, okay, you're breathing, you're not sick, there's nothing wrong with you. I think I took her to a vet twice a week the first month. And I was like, is she good? Does she sound okay? And they were finally like, mom, she's healthy. And like, that's all I needed to hear. But yeah, all my friends are like, you need to let it go. And that's the hardest thing to hear.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is, especially when you're the one having to let go of that control. And you have to go into the unknown now. And that's scary.
Yep. And everyone says like, you know, you lost everything last year. And now like so many people, even my mom's like, oh, you're living your dream. Like you have your place and no one can tell you what to do. You have your dogs. And I'm like, but there's still that kind of sadness and grief in your brain of this wasn't my dream. But I think I pre-planned my life so far ahead that these hiccups, I never imagined would ever happen. Never.
You kind of feel like, oh man, like I was forced to have to do this. I didn't want to do this.
Yeah. So my Frenchie passed very tragically and I was very embarrassed of where I got him. I did get him from a pet store. I was never one of those people who believed in pet stores. I still to this day do not. Why I walked in that one day with my mom and just fell in love with the little man in the corner, I'll never know. But I remember I never had a chance to actually grieve appropriately what I would consider because I was in this fight or flight of I need somebody to answer for what was done to him. I need to stand up for other dogs that because there's so many people that have been wrongfully put in bad places with their pets from this location. And so getting my female, I felt like it was a Band-Aid. Like I felt rushed, like, okay, I just need to get rid of this feeling of sadness. And if I have her, it's going to go away.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And then getting my boy, I'm like, okay, if I hurry up and get him, she'll have a companion for when I'm sobbing my eyes out. And she's looking at me like, oh my God, my mom is crazy. And it's not a Band-Aid. It's not something that's an easy fix. But then again, like you said, it's different for everybody. So I don't know timing wise when it would have been a good time.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for you at least, even though you felt that way, I did think it was good for you to get dogs so that they were in your life and they were bringing you joy. And there's nothing like a puppy love.
Until it's 3 a.m. and you're really tired.
Are they crate trained?
No, they scream like Jurassic Park. They can't stand the crate. I always say I got my boy to the sweet spot. He was 2, self-sufficient, would go out everywhere with me. I could take him anywhere and he would just sit in a chair and be fantastic. And it was kind of that roller coaster of I'm starting all over. I felt like I was starting all over from a relationship of being single. And, you know, I had things in storage and I was kind of getting things set up. And I just remember that feeling of like being so proud, like nobody can take anything from me. This is mine. But I remember even sitting that first day and I just sobbed in my kitchen thinking, this is what my life looks like. Got over it. But now even I'm like, okay, this is what my life looks like. We're starting all over. It's like you have a toddler and you go backwards to a newborn. I'm like, oh my goodness. And it's so hard with 2 because you never know who's into something. I'm like, was it you? Or was it your sister? And I don't want to like punish one of you if I'm punishing the wrong one. But I mean, there's moments where I'm like, okay, this was meant to happen. And he aligned it how it was supposed to be. And he still sends me pretty amazing signs here and there when I actually pay attention.
I love it. And what are these signs that he kind of sends you?
I have a LED candle. It's been in my window since he passed. There's no batteries in this candle and it will flick on and flick off at random times, which is crazy. But it's normally around breakfast time because he was definitely a gremlin. Breakfast time was his favorite. But it's in the most amazing moments when I just feel, again, like I'm losing control and it'll flick on and flick off. He sends the number 13. A lot. It shows that it's a sign for moving on, moving ahead, positivity. Well, in my casita, I moved here at the end of September. He passed in November. And I remember him passing and I put the LED candle in the window and I remember looking up and there's a number on the building across from me that I've looked at every day, the number 13. I see it every morning.
Oh, wow. I love these little signs because they're so are so big in that moment. You're in that moment of, I don't know what to do. And then you see that sign and you're like, okay, I have guidance now.
Yep. I mean, when I went to go pick up my female halfway in El Paso, I was like, I don't know if this is the right decision. I was still waiting on his cremation to be completed, and they weren't supposed to be done for a couple of days. And they called me the night before we were to leave. And they're like, he's ready for pickup. And I remember sitting there, I told my mom, like, I'm going to bring his ashes with me. Like, they're going to sit in the car seat like he always would to go pick up his sister. And I remember I left super early in the morning. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning. It was like a 7-hour drive. And I remember getting on this open stretch of a road, which was sad because exactly 1 week to the day prior, or 2 weeks from the day prior, we were on that road coming back from Arizona. So I was on that road and I remember just kind of speaking out loud. I'm like, man, I think I'm losing my mind, but I'm like, am I making the right decision? And in just that moment, the most beautiful, massive shooting star went straight across my windshield and lit that road up right in front of me. We were the only ones on that road.
Oh, wow. See, that's so beautiful to me. And I love those moments. Now, what are some other ways that you've healed since those events?
I've really, like I said in the beginning, I've really taken the time to self-reflect on what makes me happy. I think I've always been reliant on pleasing other people, whether in a relationship. And I think that was like that with my dog. I lived to please him. And with relationships, I think I've really kind of let myself down of just saying, okay, well, this may not be something I want to do, but I'm not going to say no, because if it makes my partner happy, it makes me happy. And I'm kind of in this new self-discovery of what I call being selfish. And it's such an amazing thing. Like, there's nothing better than realizing you don't have to make a 3-course meal. You can make a bag of ramen for dinner and you can wear your pajamas all day long. And if somebody judges you, that's a them problem. That's not a you problem.
100%. 100% in every way, because 2024, I think, is the year to be selfish. Do the things you want to do. You know, any goals you have, get them done this year.
Yeah. And I think it's also, if you set a goal for yourself, I'm really trying this year. If you're having a bad day, fine. I always felt guilty of, you know, I have to wake up and I have to be productive and I have to make, you know, the best of the best. And I'm really starting to just listen to myself. At 38 years old, I haven't done that in a long time. Of, if I'm tired today, I'm listening to myself and I'm going to adjust my schedule as needed. And I know a lot of people are like, well, if you don't run your own business, you don't have that luxury. Well, you have enough hours in the day and the evening that you can adjust that for yourself. And I think it's really telling of, you know, it can be, I started reading this year, a lot of books instead of goals. I have not read since I was in high school. But it's interesting. Like, one of my girlfriends in Florida is like, read this and read that. And so it's a way that we connect. I watch reality shows with a couple of my girlfriends and we always talk about it. Even this morning, I'm like, I haven't caught up. Don't spoil it. I'm not reading your text messages. But it's finding the happiness in the little things that I think I really took for granted, because I was always building a bigger picture of what life was supposed to look like.
Yeah, I think that's the beautiful thing, is when you stop building and stop planning what your life should look like and you just do the things you love, do whatever you want. That's when it all changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be scary, but it can be fun.
Yes. Yes. So true. And then what are some, and sorry about the dogs jumping in.
Oh. See, mine are going crazy under here.
It's raining. And I think he went out in the rain, had himself a little frolic, and then ran inside and was going to jump on the bed.
It's all about the little things, right? Because one day we miss those small little moments.
Right. Yes. Yes. So what are some other last words of advice for anyone going through this, anyone struggling with not wanting to be here? What are some words of advice?
The biggest sentence I use every time when I end a podcast or a live is, give yourself a little bit of grace. We are our hardest critic. And at the end of the day, you're the only one that knows what you didn't do or what you did wrong or what you did correctly. Give yourself a little bit of grace. And in those moments where you feel like you don't want to be here, I always try and go, it sounds so cliche, but I go in front of a mirror and I really look at myself. I have not done that in a very long time. And I tell myself one thing that I'm either proud of or that I love about myself that day. And it can be something very simple of like, you did a really good hairstyle today. It looks fantastic. When you didn't want to get out of bed, I talk nicely to myself. I think that's the most important thing.
I absolutely love those mirror exercises. And sometimes they're so hard to just look at yourself and tell yourself that. So I really enjoy that. Thank you so much, Tabitha, for everything. Where can we find your podcast? All your
mirror. Yeah, it's called Little Bit of Life. It streams on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, Audible, and iHeart. And we do now have a YouTube channel, something I just, again, I didn't want to do, but everyone spoke out and I heard. So you can interact with all of the videos. And I always encourage, everyone has a story. So if you ever want to come on, I always encourage, give yourself some grace and come on and share your story.
I love that so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode with Tabitha Newell. If you need an extra kick in your trauma healing journey, please check out my 30-day trauma journal that I created myself. I have used all these exercises myself. They have been very helpful in my journey and that I hope it helps you in yours. So please check it out. There is a link in the show notes. And thank you for listening to today's episode so much. I really related to this episode with Tabitha and the double grief period. I may not have lost my dog, but I lost my grandma during a breakup. And it was a lot to deal with at first. I was thankful that my ex was also there at the funeral, but it's now to move on and to be independent, you know? So I really appreciate talking to other women who have been through something and use words of inspiration from them. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give 5 stars on Apple, a good review, and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, I'm Tara Newell.